Good Tuesday afternoon. Thank you for joining us for this Ozarks at Large for July 20th, 2021. This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. I'm Kyle Kellums. Today, as COVID-19 cases surge in Arkansas and through the Ozarks, how faith leaders across our listening area and across denominations are speaking to their congregations about the disease and the vaccines that provide protection from them. Ozarks at Large's Matthew Moore tells us more in about 4.5 minutes. In our second half hour, the Walton Arts Center stage in Fayetteville has been mostly quiet during the pandemic, but a cautious approach to a 30th season anniversary is underway. We'll find out how the venue is asking patrons from the past 30 years to remember their favorite experiences. And after Ozarks and Here and Now, survivors of Canada's boarding schools for Indigenous children testified about the horrors they were lucky to survive. A conversation with Canada's first female chief of the National Assembly of First Nations. That's beginning at 1 on Here and Now on KUAF. The exponential growth of COVID-19 in Arkansas is continuing. The Arkansas Department of Health reports more than 2,500 new cases diagnosed since Friday and 15 additional deaths from the disease. Hospitalizations continue to climb, increasing by 85 patients to 681 since Friday. Active cases have jumped by 755 in the past 3 days, now more than 10,500 active cases in the state. The number of fully vaccinated Arkansans increased by about 4,700 people in the past 72 hours, and just more than 40% of people 12 and older are now fully vaccinated. The latest update from the hospitals in Benton and Washington counties shows a grim picture of what healthcare workers are dealing with. Again, there are now 83 COVID-19 patients in the two counties. That's an increase from 13 patients on June 17th and an increase of 20 patients in just the last 72 hours. The current surge is doubling the number of COVID-19 patients every 20 days. With some hospitals already full in Arkansas, Governor Asa Hutchinson is relying on his community COVID conversations approach to encourage people to become vaccinated. Speaking on NPR yesterday, the governor said that since he has started these conversations, the state's vaccination rate has increased by 40%. At these meetings, community members are able to express their concerns or ask questions about COVID-19. The governor says this has been an effective approach.
I've been to 7 cities. We've had incredible conversations, and the key has been that the anti-vaxxers actually show up and they express their conspiracy theory or their concerns. And then somebody from the community stands up and says, well, let me tell you what it did in our family and how important it is to get the vaccination. And so it is a conversation, and the community and the trusted people in the community is really making a difference.
According to the Department of Health, there were nearly 16,000 vaccine doses administered this past weekend. Governor Hutchinson will continue his community COVID conversation meetings starting July 26th in Mountain Home. A 14-year veteran of the World Trade Center in Rogers will be the next director of the center. Denise Williams will become the first black woman to be a CEO of a World Trade Center anywhere in the United States. She replaces the retiring W. Dan Hendricks. Before her new role, Thomas oversaw trade in Africa, Europe, and the Middle East for the center in Rogers. An on-ramp to the Bella Vista Bypass will open tomorrow. The Arkansas Department of Transportation expects Highway 71 southbound traffic to start using the ramp during overnight hours tomorrow. Northbound traffic will continue to access the bypass the same way, using the intersection at Peach Orchard Road, north of the construction project. And some of the top young golfers from around the world will be in Bella Vista in September. The American Junior Golf Association announced yesterday the 2021 Accenture Northwest Arkansas Junior Tournament will be hosted by 5 different courses in Bella Vista. Nearly 80 of the top junior female and male golfers will participate from September 3rd through September 6th. This is Ozarks at Large. COVID-19 vaccination rates in Arkansas are low, and in an effort to encourage the safety and trust in the vaccines, federal officials are calling on clergy and religious leaders to have meaningful conversations with their congregations. Ozarks at Large's Matthew Moore spoke to leaders from across Northwest Arkansas and the Arkansas River Valley about how they're sharing the good news of vaccines inside their communities.
On April 1st, Vice President Kamala Harris sat in front of a massive projector screen filled with hundreds of little squares, which would become the newly formed COVID-19 Community Core.
People of our country look to leaders like you, and they have been looking to you. They have been looking in your eyes, searching to believe that there should be a reason to have hope. They have been looking in your eyes and looking to you to give them some confidence that we can get through this and give them a sense of knowing that they are not alone. This is what you all have been doing.
One segment of the Community Core members were clergy and religious leaders. With vaccination rates extremely low in Arkansas and cases and deaths on the rise, it's clear we need as many trusted community leaders as we can get, encouraging folks to get the vaccine. Christianity may be the dominant faith tradition in Arkansas, but it's not the only one. And religious leaders of many traditions are actively promoting the safety and necessity for these vaccines. One of those leaders is Abdullah Isalki, the imam for the Islamic Center of Northwest Arkansas.
Of course, we talked about vaccinations, and when the vaccination became available, we hoped, and I personally hoped and prayed, and I urged people to go and get vaccinated, and especially our community member. Go get vaccinated.
Isalki says that in their religious practice, they trust science, and the idea of vaccinations is not in conflict with the Muslim faith. Traditionally, prayers are done in close quarters, but due to COVID, they have been done either at home or with very limited attendance in their mosque. If the vaccine rate starts going up and the infection rate starts going down, Isalki says it will mean they can go back to the more traditional way of worshiping together.
You know, the benefit at least is to resume our normal gathering, our normal practices, which is foot to foot, shoulder to shoulder.
Isalki is vaccinated and says one of the things he looks forward to with the new normal of a post-pandemic worship experience is the time of community before and after service.
Before this pandemic hit, we all group, youth and members and senior citizens all get together for tea and just for social gathering. And they share, and that's their favorite moment, where they share practices, share experiences, ask about each other. And they live like family. And that's not there anymore because people are worried, fear, and mask on and all that. So once they pray, they leave. And that's not something good to see. And I wonder if we can get everyone vaccinated. That's also part of our, you know, masjid activity where everyone, you know, not only use that facility as prayer, but also the social gathering, social network, and exchange experiences and concerns. And it's a moment where everyone love and favor.
Na Ha is the pastor of the Vietnamese Gospel Baptist Church in Fort Smith, and he has been frustrated that a few of his brethren in the Southern Baptist Convention have been discouraging their congregations from getting the vaccine.
It's more different from the majority of the Baptist churches, and I would be cautious about that. And on also, I follow science. I am not follow any religious leaders as well as the political leader. I see none.
Haas says he follows science, not politicians. He also says he has had a few of his congregants who have been influenced by some of the politicians, both former and current, who have been spreading misinformation.
And I sit down with them and patient and just, share with them and see what they need and guide them, go get vaccine and so on.
Ha serves a predominantly Vietnamese congregation, many of whom are immigrants to America and whose first language is not English. While most of the church members were willing and ready to get vaccinated, one of the barriers for them was language. Haas says that if someone wanted to go get the vaccine but was nervous about being able to communicate, he was happy to assist.
I offer them, I will text them, or I will get appointments or whatever. When they get vaccine, they not only save themselves, they save their family, they save the church, and they save the community, and they save the other people's life.
Ryan Pfeiffer is the senior minister at First Christian Church in Fayetteville, and he says COVID has had a drastic impact on his church.
We immediately shifted to online only, and before that, we had not done an online service. So the staff had to come together very quickly and figure out how to do that and get the equipment necessary to make that happen. But end of March of 2020, we closed our sanctuary, and only we're doing online services for quite some time.
Did you hear any pushback from your congregation about maybe you were taking things too far, maybe you were doing things too drastically? Did you hear any pushback from any members of your community?
Yes. Yes, I got pushback on both ends. I got pushback that we weren't taking it seriously enough and that we needed to wait a lot longer before we even offered an outdoor service. And mind you, our outdoor service and our indoor services are still requiring masks. And so we were being very cautious. We were spreading people out. Even outside, we had people really far apart. But there were some who were saying, this is crazy. I can't believe we're even offering this. And then I had others who felt like we shouldn't have shut the church down ever at all and kept doing in-sanctuary service without masks.
How do you respond to such a wide range of responses from folks? I mean, I'm sure that's probably the number one line in your job title, right? To respond to things that run the whole gamut of responses, right? How do you respond to that sort of thing?
Exactly. Very, very carefully. One of the things that we did immediately was my executive team on my board, which consists of about 5 or 6 people, and started visiting with them on a regular basis and just touching base. One of them serves on the Fayetteville Health Board, or serves as a liaison to the health board, so they have direct access to Dr. Sharkey. We were getting information from them. We were getting information from the CDC. And so what I was doing when I would be talking with people is saying, number one, I have no training in medicine. I have no training in epidemiology. That is not my skill set. And so I'm doing the best I can trying to rely on others. We also within our church have a pulmonologist and we have a nurse practitioner who is working on the front lines of this COVID stuff and has been the whole time. And I've leaned very heavily on them. And what I've been able to do is just share with people, especially those who are very anxiety prone, to say, look, we are on top of this. We are following every type of guideline that we can. We're listening to the experts. And we're just doing the best we can to keep people safe. That's the most important thing, is to try to keep people safe. Because at the end of the day, the last thing I want to do is for the church to be a super spreader, or for the church to inadvertently cause somebody to be hospitalized or even die because of this virus.
Pfeiffer has been vaccinated and has encouraged people to get vaccinated, but hasn't explicitly said from behind the pulpit that people should be getting vaccinated.
I'm careful with sermons. Not that my sermons don't deal with very important issues, they do, but some people really see this as very politically driven, and I've always been very careful to not preach politics from the pulpit. Don't mind talking politics one-on-one with people, but from the pulpit, that's a sacred space. But I have talked about, you know, we've got to be sensible, we've got to take care of each other, we've got to be taking the appropriate means to make sure that we're taking care of God's creation, which includes humanity. And so we're not saying that vaccinations are required. We're not even saying that vaccinations are what God is telling us to do, but we're saying they're strongly suggested. And they're suggested because we are community so that we can take care of each other. And this is one way that we can take care of each other.
In one-on-one meetings, Pfeiffer says he's able to be more of a counselor to his community that may have to have hard conversations with others.
I've had several people come to me and say, I'm not really on the fence, but I've got a loved one who is. And can you kind of help me, you know, think through that a little bit? Like I say, we were pretty fortunate in that the overwhelming majority of our congregation, as soon as they could get a shot, got a shot.
Narasimhan Rajaman is the secretary of the Hindu Association of Northwest Arkansas. The vast majority of the Hindu community here are Indian Americans.
A lot of the community is experiencing COVID in two different locations, you know, one here and one back home in India, where all of our families are. And the second wave with the Delta variant and all that, you know, that slammed India pretty hard.
The United States and India have been two of the hardest hit countries globally by COVID-19. And Rajaram says that played a significant role in how they came together as a community.
I think I can speak for people in the community in saying last year we had people who had families back home who had either contracted COVID, mild symptoms, or hospitalized and recovered. But I think this with the Delta variant, it seems like there's, you know, everyone knows or everyone has had either family or friend back home who has died due to the Delta variant. So I think, you know, like I said, you know, we're experiencing the pandemic, you know, in two very different locations. And I think that really helps us keep things in perspective.
Rajaram says that within their community, they have doctors and experts in the medical field who have volunteered to host Zoom meetings with those who may have had questions or concerns about the vaccine.
It was an open session. Community was invited to it. And, you know, people were asking all sorts of questions. Hey, what do you think of, you know, side effects due to the vaccine, you know, and those kinds of things. And, you know, the constant, you know, refrain we heard from the doctors was that, you know, the benefits are going to outweigh the risks based on what we know at this point. And so there was gentle encouragement all around, you know, to get it. You know, I think also from speaking from personal experience, I would say a super majority of the people who are here, you know, who came here from India for work and have, who have now settled here for the last 20 to 25 years, and who make up, I would say, maybe the majority of the population here, you know, we lived through the polio epidemic back home in India. And, you know, there was like, you know, the government, you know, all through the 80s and the 90s, you know, if you watch television, the ads encouraging the polio vaccine were near constant. You know, I think you would see that at least 3 or 4 times during the day, encouraging people to get the polio vaccine. And, you know, India, with a country of about a billion plus people, has, you know, almost completely eradicated polio to the point where it's not an issue anymore. And, you know, a lot of people cite the polio outreach campaign back in the 80s and 90s as one of the singular reasons, you know, for that success. And so the community has a lot of experience with vaccines working and vaccines getting rid of very dangerous diseases. And so that very likely also feeds into the acceptance of the vaccine campaign over here.
Curtis Smith is the pastor of the historic St. James Missionary Baptist Church in Fayetteville. Smith took his role as a community leader promoting the COVID-19 vaccination seriously by offering his church as a space for a mobile vaccine drive in partnership with Walmart.
And so Walmart set up their mobile vaccination units here on our campus, and we were able to vaccinate around 300 people.
Wow, that's fantastic. Do you imagine that the 300 folks who showed up to that maybe wouldn't have shown up if it hadn't been at your church?
I think so. I think that that truly helped by being at the church, because I think what happens to the church in some ways brings some sense of refuge and peace. And that was really the hope and the goal, is to know that as a church that we're not going to lead in the wrong place, although we recognize it is a personal decision for people. But I wanted to show, because myself getting vaccinated, and I did that through our social media pages at church, let them know that, hey, it's okay. It's okay to get vaccinated. I'm doing it. Look, I'm not afraid. I'm not fearful of anything.
Smith is well aware of the historical context of vaccinations in the Black community in America. So for him, he finds that it's supremely important to have conversations with his parishioners around the vaccine, with mixed results.
Honestly, in some cases, I was able to convince them to do it, and in some, I was not able to convince them. They were just pretty much where they are, and they decided this is not what they wanted to do for their own reason. Of course, they have the right to do that. And then, of course, there were some that there was someone close to the community that died, and that provoked them to go get the vaccination, because the person was a healthy person, got COVID and died. And so they went ahead and got the vaccination.
The word fear was a common thread through all these religious leaders. In the Bible, one of the most common refrains is, "Fear not, for I am with you." Ryan Pfeiffer, again, the senior minister at First Christian Church in Fayetteville, is currently preaching a sermon series on travel. And during a sermon research, found a surprisingly fitting quote from renowned traveler and public media icon, Rick Steves.
And his quote was, "The opposite of fear is understanding." And I thought, that is beautiful. Why have I not heard that before? I mean, that'll preach right there.
In the New Testament, a scribe asked Jesus, "Which commandment is the most important of all?" Jesus responds, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. The second is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than these." Curtis Smith says he's discouraged by how Christians who have been taught their whole lives to care for their neighbor are disregarding the teachings of Jesus in this moment.
You know, I think that it is more defiance than anything else. And I think it's more political than anything else. I don't think they're thinking about their neighbor. I don't think they're thinking about themselves or their families. I think it's turned into this political faux-pas. And that's where, you know, and particularly in the evangelical community, they're hanging out in.
For Smith, he feels a responsibility to preach the truth in this life or death matter.
People are dying because they're believing in so many untruths. And that is a burden to me. And particularly from a church standpoint, we ought to be the bearers of truth. And the truth is that you can die with COVID-19. Get the vaccine. You know, if you choose not to, then obviously you operate up under a different premise. And I think when people are faced with life or death, they'll generally choose life over death.
As of July 19th, 98 people have died from COVID-19 in the state of Arkansas just in the month of July. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Matthew Moore.
And on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large, one more effort to reach people with information about vaccines. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth will report on how pharmacies in more sparsely populated places in Arkansas and Oklahoma are dealing with questions and concerns about the vaccine. You can hear that story at noon or 7 p.m. tomorrow on 91.3 KUAF and at ozarksatlarge.com or KUAF.com, by enlisting the updated KUAF app for iPhone and iPad, by subscribing to the free daily podcast version of the show through any major podcast distributor or through the links at KUAF.com, or by asking your smart speaker to please play Ozarks at Large. Northwest Medical Center in Springdale is hosting a blood drive Thursday afternoon from noon until 5. It will take place in the Community Blood Center of the Ozarks Bloodmobile, which will be parked at the hospital's parking lot at 609 West Maple in Springdale. You can schedule an appointment by following the links that are available at donatecbco.org. Appointments are strongly suggested, so social distancing protocols can be maintained.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The Northwest Arkansas Kiva Hub is offering microloans to disadvantaged small business owners or sole proprietors, such as woman-owned, black-owned, and Hispanic Latinx-owned. Through this program, approved businesses operating in Benton or Washington counties can also qualify for a dollar-for-dollar loan match fund from the Walton Family Foundation, kiva-nwa.org, for more information.
Politics and COVID-19 dominate the conversation this week between Roby Brock from our partner Talk Business and Politics and John Brummett, a political columnist for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Last week, Arkansas gubernatorial candidate Sarah Huckabee Sanders posted her campaign fundraising numbers, $4.2 million for the quarter and more than $9 million raised in the fundraising cycle. Roby asked John Brummett, who has been covering politics for decades, about the fundraising success of Sanders.
Just on the way over, on my phone, flashed up a little newsflash. Liz Cheney raises $1.9 million in court. Like this was a thing. It's not a thing. It's not a thing. Here is, and it tells you a lot, here is a high-profile national Republican figure with a common, well-known name, Liz Cheney, been getting a lot of national publicity, who distinguished herself as a Republican who would stand up to Trump. And they're flashing the news that she raised $1.9 million.
Which is nothing to scoff at. $1.9 million is
something
a lot of money.
To scoff at because the Trump acolyte, the leading Trump acolyte in the world, our Sarah Sanders, who is running not for national office, but to head the insurrection outpost in Arkansas.
It's not an insurrection outpost. It's
also known as governor.
Governor of the state of Arkansas.
Raises $4.2 million on top of $5 million. $6 million of it, two-thirds, out of state from the Trump network. Liz can take her $1.9 million and they can flash that on my phone all they want. This is the real deal down here. This Trump network, she has just... It's remarkable. Now, I hope and trust and personally pray that it's like limited to 35 to 40% of the electorate, but it is a devoted and a moneyed and an invested group, and Arkansas is inordinately bought into that 35 to 40% nationally, and that's what this is all about. You won't let me say she's going to lead the insurrection outpost, but she is running totally on the name, well, it's partly on the name, her own father's name, but with Trump's imprimatur. She's running as, is that the word, or imprimatur? Imprimatur.
Somebody out there. You can spell it, but you can't use it.
I-M-P-R-I-M-A-T-U-R. And it's that's what this is all about. And the question remains, does Leslie Rutledge stay in the race, you know, against these kinds
of... She says she is. But okay. let's talk about this money again for just a second. Because I get this question a lot. I have an opinion on this, but I won't share it until I hear yours.
Okay.
What does it matter that two-thirds of the money is coming from out of state of Arkansas?
In the end, no, because it pays for things that will be spent in Arkansas, influencing Arkansas voters. And also, should any candidate begin to present the least threat to her, to assaulting them in fine Trumpian fashion. So in the end, no. Also, we're so polarized. The right wing, the Trumpian right wing, is so disdainful of anything that criticizes it, that I think this idea that that her race is entirely nationalized is not a negative to that base, to those people. They think, well, she ought to be nationalized. The problem is Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi and AOC and
the
those.
The border and all that stuff.
And that's what she said nothing. to my recollection, following on Twitter, not going to any of her events, she said nothing about an Arkansas issue at all. She's simply talking about national issues. And that's what the public now wants, because as I said last week, Jay Beckett announced for the Senate, Republican nominate candidacy for the Senate on Fox. Why? Because he had to find Arkansans. And that's where Arkansans are now. They're on Fox. We're just a little, dare I say it, a little outpost of the national political condition. So no, it won't make any difference. It'll get criticized a lot. I'll write about it. Others will write about it. Opponents will complain about it. And it will matter not.
Yeah, I agree with that. Mainly in my experience, I have discovered that voters typically think all money is pretty tainted. So whether it comes from out of state or in state, it's bad. So, but it does pay for the bills. It does make
it's bad, but they tend to be swayed by the persuasion that it can afford.
Yep,
literally afford.
Let's turn our attention to the state of Arkansas and its position with COVID-19. We have seen the numbers continue to rise over this past week, to the point that UAMS Chancellor Dr. Cam Patterson tweets and says on our show yesterday, we're out of hospital beds at UAMS. And I know other hospital CEOs are pressed for more space. What is the state of Arkansas? What should we do, in your opinion, to reverse this situation, understanding the political calculus that we're probably not going to go back into an emergency, we're probably not going to do a mask mandate. How do you get a control on this if you don't have tools like that we used a year ago?
Well, I'm glad you finished the question by pointing out what is unavailable. Even if the governor were so inclined, because of the recent legislative session, he could not do the basic things he did last year. Declare certain emergencies and have certain authorities.
Could he not do them, or could he not do them without legislative approval?
He couldn't do it without legislative approval. Okay. There's some things he could, and there's a fine line between those things specifically banned, such as mask mandates, and what he could get away with or try to get away with under emergency powers as the chief executive officer of the state. But there is legislation saying the legislature reviews all that instantly, quickly. Whereas last year you just had to work with the legislature could not bring itself into session. The legislature is currently merely in recess.
That's right.
They're in session.
Yeah.
Alarmingly, they're in session. So,
but it will undo a lot of things if they bring themselves
back. One thing
in.
That could happen is, but this is just dreaming, Ace Hutchinson could simply say, I got a few months left and I'm probably not going to be president and I got to try to help this state survive and I'm going to go for it. And go to war with the legislature, try to convince the public and the legislature that certain stringent measures must be undertaken. The legislature, I'm certain, would not go along, but more than that, the public wouldn't go along. The public didn't want to go along with them in the first place, and you can't give the people back their regular lives and then take them back again. It becomes much harder, and the people would not support it. So to say, that my point is there's very little available to the governor except this. I'm just, and I've said this many times, but I'm weary of his smiling, detached analysis. He says the right things, but he says it like, well, you know, let's all try to get a vaccine. Now, the vaccines are up a little, that's good, but the caseload is too much and our hospitals are in trouble. I need some urgency. I also need better public marketing. There are some ads.
Marketing of what?
Of go get a vaccine.
Okay.
Thank you, to make clear what I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm not marketing the virus. I'm saying marketing, go get a vaccine. There are some new spots that I'm saying. I saw in this station's news show the other night, two or three, a Baptist preacher in rural Arkansas, who surprised to see that. Other people, citizens telling personal stories and encouraging folks to get a vaccine. But I think we got to, all I know to do is go all in on the need to get a vaccine. It's our only way out of this. Go all in on the fact that that the alternative is a decline in medical care if the hospitals are full. And also all in on attacking out front the myths about this vaccine. I mean, it is not foolproof. A few people who vaccine have contracted the virus and had complications. That happens. It's not an absolute foolproof vaccination, but it's statistic. I think 98%, 98+% of the people in hospitals here and nationwide with complications are unvaccinated. A lot of the things you read on social media, Biden is trying, but in a clumsy way, to take on Facebook and say, quit letting people post these absolute myths, like the woman in Georgia saying whatever she's saying. He went too far when he said social media platforms are killing people. I don't think that was the way to go with his rhetoric. He tends to overstate. But something less incendiary than that, but more urgent and forceful and persuasive than Asa's smiling, mildly concerned analysis, which is what I get from him. So that's all I can think to do.
John Brummett is a political columnist with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Roby Brock is with our partner, Talk Business and Politics. You can find more news from Arkansas at talkbusiness.net, and you can read John Brummett's columns at arkansasonline.com.
For the Central Arkansas Library System, I'm Mark Chris with an Encyclopedia of Arkansas Minute. President Woodrow Wilson formed a Council of National Defense in 1916 to coordinate industries and resources in case the U.S. entered World War I, but it would be 2 years before Black Arkansans were included. While a white state Council of Defense was established on May 22, 1917, 50 days after the U.S. declared war on Germany, Arkansas, like other states, was reluctant to organize its black citizens. Federal officials push for black involvement, writing, "The Negro population can render valuable assistance in the present crisis." It was late summer of 1918, though, before the Arkansas Gazette reported planning for more than 30 African-American auxiliaries around the state. The Arkansas Colored Auxiliary held its first meeting on August 10, 1918, led by attorney Scipio A. Jones. Both state and national councils, though, maintain oversight of the auxiliary, writing, "In most cases, the Negroes will no doubt be pleased to have representatives of the other body present at their meetings." To learn more, visit encyclopediaofarkansas.net.
This is Ozarks at Large. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Lee Wood, General Manager at 91.3 KUAF. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
And welcome back. I mean, I know you've been in the studio a couple times since we've all been vaccinated here, but it's still...
I know. Every time that we sit in one room and talking to mics, it still feels like it's been a while.
Yes.
So I'm happy to be here.
And I'm happy you're here. And you're here to talk about a couple of... one new thing and one updated thing.
Okay. Yes.
You'll allow me that. All right. Let's start with the newish thing. It's the first time in like 7 years we're asking listeners to tell us what they think.
Yes. So we're asking for feedback in a listener survey. The last time we did it was in the summer of 2014. So it's been a little while. And yes, we have put together a survey. It's 30 so questions. I can't remember the exact number. It takes about 10 minutes to fill out. And we're trying to get as many responses from as many listeners as we possibly can, because it's important to us to hear from our listeners on how they feel about the programming, how and where they listen, since so much of that has changed, especially in the last 18 months. You know, we want to know more about you, the listener. And also, we really are asking for listener feedback on how we can do better in our reporting, in our coverage, in our programming, in our interaction with the community. You know, we're really – we cherish the feedback of our listeners. Of course, we say it all the time that listeners are the lifeblood of this station, and monetarily that's absolutely true, but also in our interaction in the building of community. So we think it's really important.
I mean, really, without listeners, I'm just sitting in a studio talking to myself.
Especially if I'm not here, Kyle.
That's right. Not that I don't do that, you know, at other times, but all right. So, and how do you take this survey?
Oh, good question. You can go to KUAF.com. We have a link there that will send you to the survey, which is on a different site. We can also, if you get any of the newsletters, those have been highlighted in all of the newsletters. So you can also do that at KUAF.com. Go sign up for the Ozarks at Large newsletter or the station newsletter.
And won't one survey taker receive something?
Yes. So when you complete the survey, you'll be entered into a drawing to win this really big prize package we've put together that I think is, I mean, every KUAF goodie we have in the station we've thrown in there. So we're talking about posters and CDs and koozies and coffee mugs and a special Ozarks at Large blend, coffee blend from our Segas.
Yes.
So almost any sort of goodie we have here at the station, we're putting it together in this huge prize package. And if you take the survey and complete it, you'll be entered to win in that drawing.
All right. That's the new thing. The updated thing is the KUAF app.
Yes. So we've had a KUAF app for iPhone and iPad for a while, and we needed to upgrade it. So we've worked out some little bugs. Mostly, most users use it to listen live. Mm-hmm. So you have immediate access to our three digital streams, one, which is our FM programming, and then KUAF 2, which is our 24-hour classical programming, and then KUAF 3, which is Jazz Works and our local music programming. So you can very easily find those and listen to them through this app. A couple of new things, though, is we can – the KUAF Connects feature that we've been talking about a lot, that's a phone line where we've been asking for listeners to call in and answer some questions we've been asking, share their memories, their experiences with the station. You can now do that through the app as well. So it's cool. It's like it's similar to apps that 1A and Science Friday have, where basically it is a voice recording feature. There are a number of prompts or questions listed in the app. You choose which one you want to answer. You hit record, say your answer or your feedback into your phone. When you're done, you hit stop, and then you'll get the option to send it directly to the station, and then it comes directly to us, and we can use it on the air, or the news team might want to reach out to this person and see if there's more information that we might need to get. So it's just another way to connect with the station. That's pretty cool.
That is cool. And it's simple to use. So if you have the KUAF app on your iPhone or iPad right now, you're going to need to do the update.
Yes. And it, depending on what your settings are, it'll update automatically because it is just an updated version of our previous app. So once you get the updated version, get in there and start exploring around and you'll see the Connects feature, which is at the bottom in the middle of that app. And it'll take you to that place where you can interact and send us, you know, what you want to tell us. And we'll hopefully get a lot of them and edit them and air them like we have been doing with the messages on the Connects line.
The app is free.
Yes, it is.
Lee Wood, General Manager, 91.3 KUAF. Thanks, Lee.
Thanks, Kyle.
So we're asking you to leave us a message through our new app. And it turns out the Walton Arts Center is also interested in hearing from you. This fall, the venue will launch a 30th anniversary season. And they're asking for patrons' memories of the first 29 seasons. We'll learn more just ahead on Ozarks at Large.
KUAF is giving away a pair of meet-and-greet VIP tickets to see Lindsey Stirling Tuesday, July 27th at the Walmart Amp in Rogers. This package includes a meet-and-greet with photo and more. The winner will be announced Friday, July 23rd during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Registration and details at KUAF.com. The Botanical Garden of the Ozarks presents Terrific Tuesday Nights now through the end of August. Each Tuesday at the Garden offers extended hours from 5 to 8 p.m. and admission is free. Family-friendly concerts will be offered on select dates. bgozarks.org for more information.
Next week, the Walton Arts Center will unveil most of its upcoming season. The Broadway season, including Hamilton, was announced earlier. And the people who put together the season want to know what you remember from previous seasons of plays, concerts, and shows. Jennifer Wilson, the director of public relations for the Walton Arts Center and the Walmart app, came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio last week to explain how these shared memories are being collected and why they're being collected this year.
April marked our 29th anniversary. So this season that we're starting with, the 21-22 season, is our 30th anniversary season. So 3 decades with Walton Arts Center in the community.
That's crazy.
It's, and it doesn't seem like it's been that long, but then on the other side, it seems like it's definitely been that long, you know? This all launched from the fact that when we started having to stop our large programming during the pandemic, and people would come to us and they would just voluntarily share, like, oh, I miss this about Walton Arts Center, or I got to see this show there and I can't wait until I get to come back. So we kept hearing all of these memories that people were just volunteering to share with us, and we wanted to find a way to capture those. And the thought behind it is we want to try to capture it and then incorporate it into our 30th anniversary season through marketing materials, through some of the celebrations that we're doing, because we really are the community's performing arts center. You know, that's how we launched the program.
So how can people share memories?
It's really easy. So you can go to our website, waltonartcenter.org. There's it's featured on that front page as a My Walton Arts Center button. If you click there, you can record directly from your laptop, and it will send an email. It actually comes to me, and I'm the one who kind of sorts through everything. Or you can call our voicemail box, and that's the 571-2702, and leave a message there. Either one of those works. Also, throughout the probably the next few months, we'll be sharing social posts, throwback posts, you know, that show old pictures of different things that have happened over the years, and asking people to share their memories. And it is perfectly okay to share your memory on that social post as well.
I'm guessing, I know the number of shows varies from year to year, but individual shows. So like if you count a Broadway appearance as one show, mm-hmm. I'm guessing it's at least 100 a year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, easily. I feel like I've seen on a pretty regular basis a listing of like 300 curtains, which would mean 300 performances.
Okay.
So that would count that Broadway show as eight.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, but if you have 300 curtains, because we're talking, you know, not just Baum Walker, mm-hmm. but the other but if you have 300 curtains, that's 300 times 30 is 9,000?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It's a lot. And that, you know, over the times, you know, that's also special events. That's the Colgate Classroom Series. Right. It's master classes. It's not just coming to a show at Walton Arts Center. It's coming to any kind of event that we have at Walton Arts Center or out in the community, like Artisphere. All of those count as well.
And AMP.
And AMP.
All right. So I have a memory. And I think this is the first season. There's a singer named Jubilant Sykes.
Uh-huh.
And he performed at Walton Arts Center.
Okay.
And I think he might have been with what was then called the North Arkansas Symphony Orchestra.
Okay.
Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. He was at Walton Arts Center a few times those first years. And at one point he did this medley of American gospel tunes. And it just blew the place away. Also, we didn't have a performing arts center like Walton Arts Center before this.
Right.
So there
was
all of the shows that year were sort of electric, like just look at this venue.
Right.
But after he got done with that, it was a spontaneous standing ovation. You know, you get standing ovations at the end of shows, and you can argue whether they're expected or not.
Right.
But this was in the middle of a show, and I'll never forget that.
That's
that the
awesome.
People in the middle, I was in the balcony, just all of a sudden out of pure euphoria at his performance.
That it's such a physical reaction to a performance that you have to stand up. Yeah.
Yes.
It's so awesome. It really is.
So I should call and leave that memory.
You should, or maybe I can get a little clip
of
this.
Yeah, there you go. I guess I just did record it, didn't I? What do you hope? I mean, because you don't know every performance that's been in the past 30 years.
No, I have to go look stuff up to see who's been here and who hasn't been here.
Tony Bennett has been here.
Yeah.
I mean.
And it's so crazy. Like as memories are coming in and I'm kind of sorting through them and kind of categorizing them, it's really been a little bit of everything. It's been someone who attended a wedding at Walton Arts Center and it had a special meaning to them and why that was the case. Or we've had several that are Colgate Classroom Series. So they've come – they are adults now who came as children, and it was their first exposure to Walton Arts Center and how that's impacted their life moving forward. We have several who have done that and some that are on staff who have done that. Mm. So it's just a variety, and it can be anything from something that is super profound to just something that was a lot of fun. We just want to hear the variety of things that the community has experienced at Walton Arts Center.
All right. The phone number again to leave that memory?
It's 479-571-2702.
30 years.
I know.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Jennifer Wilson is the Director of Public Relations at the Walton Arts Center and the Walmart AMP. She came to our studio last week. The release of the 30th anniversary season from the venue will take place next week. And on our next show, which is tomorrow at noon and 7 p.m., we'll dig into what some people who contracted COVID-19 months ago are feeling now. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports on long COVID-19 symptoms. And later this afternoon on KUAF, on All Things Considered, when domestic violence occurs in a home, children are sometimes removed and placed into foster care. Is that always safer for them? An investigation into the foster care system this afternoon on All Things Considered from 3 to 6 on 91.3 KUAF.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. I'm Pete Hartman. Today, joined in studio with David Sanders. He's Executive Director of Ozark Ballet Theater. David, nice to meet you.
Oh, nice to meet you, Pete. Thanks for having me.
Ozark Ballet Theater. How long has this been about? Why did it come about?
My wife and I moved here about a year ago. And we wanted to start a ballet school. We're both professional dancers, teachers for, combined about 25 years of experience. And we saw, once we got here, that there were no large nonprofit dance offerings in Northwest Arkansas for classical ballet. Most schools here, and they're great. I don't bereave them. They're a fantastic dance education here. They don't have the nonprofit resources to reach out to the communities that we think are important to reach. And we've been working all over Northwest Arkansas. We've been in Eureka Springs. We've been in Bentonville, Centerton, Rogers. And now we're working down here in Fayetteville. Our outreach is reaching over 100 people a month. We plan on doubling or tripling that in the coming months, but I think it's a good start for a new organization.
What I know of ballet in particular, it seems like it is steeped in history of those who have.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's a problem. And in ballet, historically, it was an art for the king, King Louis XIV, and has always been sort of this high class, and there's kind of a thought around it that you know it makes itself inaccessible almost, and we aim to change that, not just because it's good for the community. I mean, there's health implications, there's discipline, there's a whole lot that classical ballet can give you, but we want to give ballet relevance again. And if only one class and one demographic, let's face it, has access to ballet training, then the art produced on the other end might not be interesting to a wider audience. So, and you know, that's bad for dance as a whole. That's bad for dancers who are trying to work. And so we want to change that. We want to have that dialogue. And you know, when our main goal is to have at least 50% of our full-time students when we have a school fully scholarshiped, and you know, the rest at a reduced rate. So that we can have those conversations and we can reach people who wouldn't traditionally practice ballet.
Y'all are now 2 weeks into a 6-week ballet class that you're working with Fayetteville Public Library. Tell us about this.
Great. Yes, Fayetteville Public Library has a new movement room. And my wife, Katie, the artistic director, Katie Stassi, and I, we decided that we would do a free program that allows people over 6 weeks to learn all the basics that they would need to get into, drop in on a beginner ballet class. Because while there's a lot of exercise, fitness, ballet programs, you know, pure bar, all of that, and all of those are great. They're great exercise. We think that ballet itself can be practiced by the general public, that ballet is for everybody and everybody. And you know, to that end, we decided, hey, 6 weeks for kids 7 to 11, 12 to 17, and 18 up. Everybody is welcome to come, and they were just taking baby steps, learning it a little bit at a time, so that at the end of it, all of that mysticism and intimidation that you might have that might stop you from going and exploring ballet, we just want to break that down.
Can someone still come along and work, or do you need the whole 6-week course?
So preferably you would do the 6 weeks. Really, if you're not in by week three, I would definitely start looking at taking our next course, which will hopefully start up soon, as resources permit.
David Sanders, Executive Director of Ozark Ballet Theater. Again, they're bringing high-quality classical dance training to underserved communities throughout the Ozarks here.
For more information, you can go to obt.dance. That's www.obt.dance. If you want to help us out, that'd be great.
David Sanders with Ozark Ballet Theater. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
The Community Spotlight and KUAF Public Radio. Local matters.
Time to wrap up a Tuesday edition of Ozarks at Large. This is your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF. Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and all of Yell County, KUAF is a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas, and Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF created inside the Carver Center for Public Radio. Contributors today included Matthew Moore, and the show was produced by Timothy Dennis. The Community Spotlight is hosted and produced by Pete Hartman. Working in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio, you can hear new editions every weekday morning at 6:30 and 8:30 inside Morning Edition, and then expanded editions on many of our daily editions of Ozarks at Large. Our conversations most Tuesdays between Roby Brock from Talk Business and Politics and John Brummett, political columnist for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, are made possible through our continuing collaboration with Talk Business and Politics. More about them at talkbusiness.net. Also, our thanks to Lee Wood, KUAF's general manager, for coming by our studio today to talk about the KUAF survey and the updated KUAF app. More about those items at KUAF.com. Our show's theme is titled The First Hurrah. It is written and performed by Daryl Sean. From the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for being with us. Please take care of yourself. Check on the people you care about. We'll talk again soon.